Hello and welcome. Welcome to Step Up Nigeria podcast. This is our third podcast in the series and we're glad to have you with us again. Our topic today is tackling unexplained wealth in Nigeria. And I am Oluwa Feremi Adeola and I will be the facilitator of this discussion. I have with me here Ibukun Oluwa Ijaobo, my colleague from Step Up Nigeria, and our guest for today is the Dr. Otive. I would like him to introduce himself.
Thank you very much. My name is Otive Ibuzo, and I'm the Executive Director of the African Center for Leadership, Strategy and Development, Center LSD.
Thank you very much, sir. We're glad to have you with us.
It's my pleasure.
So our discussion today will be centered on illegal wealth acquisition in Nigeria. We'll be discussing the extent to which property has become the illegal money route, escape route for illegal wealth in Nigeria and the culture of praising unexplained wealth in the country. And I think as we would all have observed so far, there's a widely accepted culture in Nigeria of praising wealth without any knowledge of its source. And wealth seems to have become an end in itself. There's a get-rich-or-die-trying mentality that's eating deep into our culture. And this is why our politics has also become a do-or-die affair, because it's become one of the easiest ways to access illicit funds in Nigeria. So I would like to consult your views. Ibukun, I'll ask you first, what do you think is the link between unexplained wealth and, our social norms, our value systems? How have our belief system as a nation allowed the prosperity of unexplained wealth in Nigeria?
Thank you very much, Feremi. I would like to say if we're trying to tackle unexplained wealth as a result of corruption in Nigeria, it's going to be a collective role of everyone in Nigeria. It says that this has become a social norm. We don't longer ask questions like people acquire properties, they acquire cars, they acquire a lot of things that we as individuals are supposed to question, but we don't do that. And most of the time, most of these people are tagged as being favored, blessed, without really looking deeply at how exactly they were able to afford or acquire some of these things. So I guess it's time for us as individuals to start questioning friends and families whenever we see these people acquiring things that we know that they do not have means of doing it, in the sense that if on the average you have an idea of what people that are close to you should be able to afford on the average. So if we see anything or we're suspicious that something might be going on wrong, something might not be going on well, there's something fishy about this person, I think it's time to start asking questions as an individual so as to make people doing that uncomfortable. And with that, it becomes a norm to always ask questions, and then people do not get comfortable doing these things anymore.
Okay, Dr. Sebi, just to continue in the social norms discussion, I'm wondering, I think oftentimes Nigerians fail to see the link between corruption and this unexplained wealth. They just praise monies without knowing the source, but I think they don't realize that the monies they are celebrating sometimes are hospitals or schools or classrooms that are supposed to have been in their villages, in their communities. All they see is wealth and appreciate that wealth. So what part of our culture has played a part in making that possible?
Thank you very much. I think that it's a very complex thing, and it has not always been like this. There is a moral degeneration in society. I remember very clearly growing up in the village. If somebody leaves the village, goes to town, and comes back with a car, there is a family meeting. How did you get this car? And what work are you doing? In fact, the family will not just take the explanation, they will send somebody to follow him. Most people don't fly from my village, they go to Lagos. They will send somebody to follow you to Lagos. But it has also been a lot of reasons and history that we have come to where we are today. Part of the problem is the colonial origin of government. In those days, government was occupied by white people. And if you leave your village and go to government, and you take government money and bring it back to your village, you are rewarded with chieftaincy title.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you see that government in many languages, government work, is translated in many Nigerian languages to white man's job. In my language, Yoruba, Iroro Igbo means white man's job. In Igbo, Oro Igbo means white man's job. I don't know why it is in Yoruba. Something in Yoruba.
Yes.
What does it mean?
The king's work.
The king's work. Yes. So it's not the community.
Which relates to
you know, and the king then was the white man.
Mm.
So one person who, if he steals community money, will be seen with disapproval, will steal government money and is hailed, is praised by people. And like your introduction mentioned, the military also contributed a lot to it. Because we saw during military regime, people were appointed without criteria, and
yes,
all of a sudden they became rich. But there is a linkage between corruption and unexplained wealth. Because I think that over the years, people realize that there are two kinds of people whose lifestyle, you know, do not tally with their known income. These are politically exposed persons, that is, people who are into government positions, they are able to give contracts to people and all of that. And people who are involved in criminal things like drug trafficking, human trafficking, and so on. So that's why some countries have responded to this by bringing what is now called unexplained world order. In the United Kingdom, it is part of the 2017 Criminal Finance Act, which simply requires the owner of an asset to explain how they were able to afford the asset. So, if you have a mansion and your salary is 20,000, it doesn't. So, with this law, the onus is on you to explain how you were able to get that
acquire
such wealth. And you know, if you come to Abuja, for instance, you know, in this Abuja, there are many estates that nobody stayed for 5 years. You know, anybody who works very hard to get money to build estate, we want people to stay and collect it, no matter how. So, the people have seen that if you can't explain how you made your money, then there is a possibility that there is corruption.
Yes, yes. Thank you.
I also like to add to what you have said, that our religious organizations are also failed to ask questions, in the sense that if there's a sudden change in status, I think religious leaders should take it upon themselves to make sure that they ask questions to see what exactly is going on. Like when you say that when someone's lifestyle does not match the known income. So like any religious leader, especially in small groups, would know or would have an idea of what income their members and what occupation they do. So if they smell anything not going on right, or they smell anything fishy, it is actually their responsibility to ask. So if this is done often, it will make members accountable, and they will feel very embarrassed if if they know that, like if my pastor,
everybody
gets to know this, everybody's going to know that I'm doing something shady, and it won't go that well with me. So,
yeah, I agree with what has been said so far. I think we don't ask the question, how could he afford it, enough in our culture. It's just okay to see the pizzazz and the flamboyance and everybody wanting to be like them without knowing. And I think that's also why we can say it has flourished this long and degenerated to this point, because we've all accepted it and stayed quiet. But in that light, what role do we think civil society has in creating this change? Like, what can we put in place to make it more difficult to acquire these assets? And what can we do to make acquiring unexplained wealth a thing of shame instead of a thing of pride in Nigeria? So, please.
Well, I think that there are a lot of things that can be done. If you acquire property that you cannot explain the source, then the most likely thing is corruption. And we know that there is a formula for corruption, which says that corruption is equal to monopoly plus discretion, minus transparency, minus accountability, and minus integrity. So, the point is to create an environment where there is no monopoly, where discretion is limited, there are rules, there are principles, and there are ways of doing things, where things are done in a transparent and accountable manner, where every organization has integrity system to ensure that corruption is difficult. That is why we've always said that corruption can be dealt with using what we call the 3 S. First is to deal with the system. The system of procurement, the system and mechanism of doing things. And then the second is to deal with society, to look at the norms and values of people, the way people see world, the way they regard things. In those days, there are people who are not rich, but they are well respected in society. And then the third is a sanction, to make sure that those who beat the system and don't care about what society think and go about and engage in corruption, there should be sanction placed upon them by government. And civil society has roles to play in ensuring whether the system in place or the society becomes intolerant of corruption, or that sanctions take place. And we can talk of, in Nigeria here, many organizations have done a lot of work. My organization, for instance, the African Center for Leadership, Strategy and Development, have been promoting the open government principles, OGP. Because, like we said, where there is transparency, when there is accountability in a system, the place of corruption would be less.
Yes.
There are many organizations that are pushing for sanction, like HEDA, led by Lanre Suraj, you know, where they write petition to relevant law enforcement agencies to sanction people who have been alleged to have engaged in corruptible transactions. And there's also the property tracker, which has just been released by ANIG, which is because of the understanding that most stolen wealth are hidden in luxury properties. So that property tracker by ANIG is to encourage citizens to report properties that are known by politically exposed persons. And then you link it up with the Federal Inland Revenue to see what are the earnings of these people. You can know they are earning from the taxes they are paid, and see whether are they even paying tax on those properties. So these are all, and they are advocating for property identification number, just like BVN. So if you have several properties with your property identification number, it can be linked to you. So civil society has great roles to play in dealing with corruption in society, and they can play this role by either strengthening the system. And if you want to strengthen the system, there are a lot of things you can do. You can do corruption risk assessment for different agencies, and that corruption risk assessment will bring about the vulnerabilities in those systems. And when you have identified the vulnerabilities, then you can build integrity systems within those organizations, because to make corruptible transactions impossible, difficult, if not impossible. So that, because if people, you know, there is what we call the corruption triangle, that if people have motivation to engage in corruption, and they have the opportunity to engage in corruptible transactions, and there is pressure from society to engage in that corruption, corruption will take place. So when you build integrity for an organization, you deal with the questions of motivation by putting again in place a good environment. You deal with the problem of opportunity by reducing discretion, so that they have no opportunity. And then you deal with the issues of pressure by putting in place code of ethics and code of conduct. So all of those things would constrain
together,
people
yes.
from engaging in corruptible transactions.
Thank you very much, sir. That was very enlightening.
Yeah, Ebuku? Thank you very much, sir. I particularly like the fact that the use of technology is being explored in promoting transparency. Like you mentioned, sir, that the African Network for Environment and Economic Justice, ANIJ, is doing at the moment. And that platform, I find it very user-friendly as well, and something anybody can engage with at any time. And it's just to log on their website, you register to submit the property, and then it creates a unique username, after which they automatically send like a confirmation, just to make sure that it's a human being that is registering to that platform to report a particular case. And then I also like the fact that they actually take that up, do some more research by visiting FIRS, going to the property itself before they then upload this for the whole world to see that this is what they found. So I find that particularly interesting, the fact that anybody, even the old, the young, can be a part of this in tackling corruption.
And I like that you also mentioned that, because really civil society has the most work to do, as well as the citizens of the country, because a holistic approach is needed to fight this problem at all the stages of the corruption cycle. Prevention, deterrence, institutions, legislation, at every stage, civil society needs to collaborate on the different spheres. As Project Tracker has taken, you know, the end of it, we're going to tackle the properties, we need to work on the prevention. At every stage, I think civil society should really just look at the problem as a whole, and if agencies would pick different aspects of the problem and tackle that particular challenge, when everybody works together in that way, I do believe that we would collaborate to tackle this issue of unexplained wealth and corruption in general in Nigeria. Because like we've said, if we are able to tackle throwing illicit funds into property, because of the nature of theft, they will just transfer these illicit funds to another aspect of the economy, and the problem will still linger. So really, our values and our social norms, I think, are a major part of what the problem are, our belief systems and the values we uphold as a country. And if we can change our values and our thinking, I do believe we would change the country. Which is why, and I'd like to mention at this point, Step Up Nigeria has a anti-corruption children's book project that we're launching September 4th. And it seeks to teach children from the very young age what corruption is and to link things that people would normally not see as corruption for children, so that when we're grooming the younger generation, we can catch the youth young. And if we can change the minds of our future leaders, then in the future, Nigeria will have better prepared leaders to fight corruption. So would you both like
I think that is a commendable initiative by Step Up Nigeria, because we need to catch them young. Corruption is undoubtedly one of the major challenges that is slowing down the development of Nigeria. From 1999 to 2014, Nigeria received over 70 trillion naira from oil alone. But we can't see how it has been translated to improve infrastructure, for education, for health, or for increased food sufficiency. So it is important for civil society to step up its game. But just to also point out that the fight against corruption requires a holistic approach.
Sir.
And it requires everyone from society. There are three other categories of people that have a lot of work to do in fighting corruption everywhere in the world. First is the executive branch of government. It's the executive branch of government that will put in place mechanisms and systems to make corruption difficult, if not impossible. So the executive branch of government must put mechanisms in place. It must put code of ethics in place. It must put code of conduct in place. And then put in place financial regulations, procurement procedures, make sure there is open procurement, make sure that the budget process is open, responsive, and inclusive. Yeah. So all of these help in reducing corruption. Then the second is the legislature. The legislature, you are laughing. Don't mind the current legislature, but we must continue to advocate that legislators have three key work that they need to do: lawmaking, representation, and oversight.
Yes.
The oversight function of the legislature is key to reducing corruption. They make the appropriation and they should be able to check every ministry, department, and agency how the monies are spent. And then the third group, which is also crucial, is the media. The media can do a lot of investigative journalism. And in fact, the media is the only group in Nigeria that has the constitutional responsibility of holding government to account.
Mm.
So yes, civil society has a lot of role to play, but civil society alone cannot do it.
Mm.
It has to be in conjunction with the power. And the earlier we recognize that in society, in Nigeria, the better for us. There is an erroneous impression by many Nigerians thinking that if you have a president who is against corruption, that will fight corruption.
Mm.
We need every hand to be on deck for us to deal a deadly blow on the cancerous nature of corruption in Nigeria.
Thank you very much, sir. Your speaking just reminded me of the saying that Nigerians have that, government money is no one's money.
Mm.
But from what you just said, if we all take ownership of our country at every stage, in every group of society, then we can fight corruption and, if possible, completely remove it from our systems. So thank you, sir. We would like to know how we can contact you and your NGO, your organization, your website, and any other ways in which we can reach out.
Well, my website is very easy. You don't need to see your guy at the top. It is www.centerlsd.org. And our organization, we are based in Abuja here at number 4 Frank Afewa Crescent in Apo near Apple Legislative Quarters. We also have a branch in the Niger Delta at Emonorogu in Ugeri local government area of Delta State. We have other two branches, one in Kebbi and the other in Yola. So we have four offices operating. And we basically focus on working with agents of positive change to transform Nigeria. So we work in several areas, areas of governance, areas of livelihood, areas of resource governance particularly. And we are happy to be associated with Step Up Nigeria.
Thank you very much, sir. It was a pleasure to have you here. Ibuku, any last words? Okay. So please follow Step Up Nigeria on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at step_up_Nigeria. And our website is www.stepupnigeria.org. You can follow our blog post and expect to listen to our next podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening to us. And thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.